Chapter 8. Storm stayed at Sikinos. We had our misgivings when the caique which had brought us down from Eos left us alone on the shores of Sikinos, some 2 hours' distance from the town. "There is no harbour in Sikinos," said our captain, when we remonstrated and wished him to stay, and when we remarked that if he did not come back for us at the appointed time, we should take another caique, he only laughed at us and told us that there was only one caique belonging to Sikinos, and that this was now at Eos. It was a fact. We found that Sikinos had only one caique and 4 rotten fishing boats, which will never venture in winter time 100 yards from the shore. It is likewise a fact that the solitary caique and the 4 rotten fishing boats have to be drawn up on the beach every night, for there is no harbour. And a proverb belonging to this island aptly describes the position. If an army of rats tried to land on the north shore of Sikinos, not one would be saved. There is an indentation, called a bay, on the southern coastline into which the solitary caique can run. Otherwise, Sikinos is a mere rock running down sheer into the waves, about 8 miles long by 2 wide. When our caique had left us, we sat down in the rocks on which we had landed and ate our food. Then we dispatched our servant to town for mules, and sat guarding our luggage in one of the most solitary places I ever was in for 4.5 hours. It was a bleak, barren, weird-looking spot, with grey marble rocks towering above us, and nothing to be heard except the cry of the red-legged partridges and the occasional shriek of a seabird. And as the wind began to rise and gloomy clouds appeared, we looked regretfully across the narrow and now rough strait which separated us from Eos, the steamer, and the world, and wondered whether we were quite wise in visiting Sikinos at this time of year. It was almost dark when, to our inexpressible delight, muleteers arrived, and soon we were on our way to the Hora, across fearfully rocky, pathless hills, and long before we reached our destination, it was darkness visible. The Hora, or town of Sikinos, is the only inhabited place on the island, and consists of 2 villages about 5 minutes distant from each other, which divide between them the 1,200 inhabitants of the island. Consequently, they have not much difficulty about nomenclature. One bears its original name of the Castro, or camp. The other is called the other place, and no further distinction is necessary. The Sikiniotis are a primitive race of people, pure, unadulterated Greeks who colonized the island, which was uninhabited during the Middle Ages. About 300 years ago, refugees came hither from Crete to get out of the way of the Turkish oppression and built themselves the Castro, high up on the mountainside, where they could be safe from pirates and Turkish supervision. And here they have lived ever since, mingling hardly at all with the outer world, and never likely to be disturbed by the advent of steamer or telegraph. Perhaps, if we had previously known how quaint and primitive the Sikiniotis were, we should have arranged for a longer stay amongst them. But the elements settled this question for us. A good, steady northern gale set in almost immediately we arrived, and we were left storm-stayed amongst them for 5 whole days. We plunged into the dirty Castro through a gateway, and in the dark sank ankle-deep in slush, which in other countries would only have been encountered in a pigsty, and found ourselves housed by an exceedingly hospitable and jovial dimarch, rough indeed and uncivilized, but what could we expect better at Sikinos? His house is one of the oldest and decidedly the most respectable in the place, having about it some rather feeble traces of architectural development, for our bedroom had 2 hideously grotesque animals as capitals to the door jambs, and most of the doors boasted of some ornamental decoration more or less important according to the rooms into which they led. But a damper house I have never saw in all my life. All our clothes were wet, and dew stood on our boots in the morning. Some boots belonging to the family which they'd left under the bed were quite green with mould. But the dimarch made up for any deficiencies of climate by his joviality and good fare. He seemed to live in a perpetual state of jokes, some of them not the most choice, to be sure, but then he was the dimarch and an old man, and he had unlimited license. He fed us well too, and had a suckling pig expressly killed and cooked for our benefit, just 12 days old. It was, according to the Greek idea then, at its perfection, for they say, a lamb or a kid should be 3 days old, a sucking pig 12 days old, and a heifer 40 days old before it is fit to eat. The castro has about it all the elements of a fortified town. Two entrances, one of which is a mere passage and easily closed up in time of danger. The backs of the houses, as usual, form the wall of the town. There is the church in the middle, and in the front, the square space for dancing. It is 800 feet above the sea, and immediately on leaving the town on the northern side, you descend an almost precipitous cliff to the shore, where up a little gully are drawn up the four rotten fishing boats belonging to the island. Every January 7th, on St. John the Baptist Day, the priests of the place, with all their sacred paraphernalia, and followed by all the people, go down the steep path to bless the waves and the four rotten fishing boats. Of course, the ceremony is usual all over the coast of Greece, but it strikes one as rather ludicrous here in Sikinos, where there is so little to bless. After the customary prayer, the priest throws a cross into the sea with a stone attached to it, and an expert diver with his clothes on jumps in to get it out, receiving some coppers for his pains. When this ceremony is over, the priests and the people wend their steep way home again, and the sailors' minds are at peace one more, for between Christmas Day and this ceremony, they are very chary about trusting themselves to the mercy of the elements. The sailors of Sikinos, too, have rather curious superstition, that if they wash their feet during the first 6 days of August, that is to say, until the candle of Christ's transfiguration is lit, as the expression goes, they will get those round sores of which we saw so many on the bare legs of our sailors, and which doubtless come from poverty of blood and poor fare. Now, in other islands, there exists a kindred superstition. If linen is washed these days, it'll get holes in it. Theophilus Keres, the Andriot schoolmaster, had a theory about these, that during the early days of August he had often noticed a wind to blow which brought with it microscopic animals, which settled on anything damp and produced the holes in the clothes. In a similar way, I should not think it unlikely that the fast which the church enforces at this time, coupled with the heat, would have the same effect on the blood. Amongst other curious maladies known to the Sikinotes, and which I never met elsewhere, is a disease called bird blindness. It must be a species of ophthalmia arising from the exposed position of the town and great damp always prevailing here. It is quite certain, at all events, that there many here suffer from their eyes, and they attribute it to the following cause. That if anyone, especially a child, drinks of water out of which a bird has previously drunk, he is liable to this disease. He will become blind after sunset, and he will suffer from an unpleasant buzzing in the ears. When a child is suffering from the disease, they adopt the following remedy. Several other children accompany the patient, whom the eldest and strongest carries in his arms, and as they go from house to house, they sing, "Our little so-and-so is ill, he has bird blindness, and whoever refuses to tell him how to be cured, God will cast out." But if the person be grown up and the treatment is different, then they take the heart of a black lamb and throw it raw to a black cock, and when he has pecked at it 3 times, they cook it and give it to the patient to eat. We climbed one day down the cliff to see the little cleft on the northern coast below the town, which they grandly call the Northern Harbour. The four rotten boats were there, drawn up the gully, with their oars and gourds ready for their owners to go out fishing on the first fine day. There seems to be no fear of robbers on this island, for boathouses and stores for fishing tackle are unknown. It is very wild and beautiful. This northern coastline of Sikinos, fertile in every kind of wild herb and flower, clinging to its precipices in spite of the keenness of the north wind which blows upon them. The cliff was a perfect garden just now of narcissus, anemone and euphorbia. The little church of St. Nicholas, which guards the four boats, is almost buried in luxuriantly growing wild mastic. Sikinos is famed for its honey far and wide, And Tournefort, in his day, tells us what a valuable field it was for botanical research. The morning after our arrival was fairly fine, with the ominous gatherings of a tempest in the air, so we decided forthwith to make our one expedition in the island to the Temple of Pythian Apollo and the ruins of the old town. Episcopi, they now call the old temple, which has been converted into a church. It is about an hour's mule ride from the town, and the road which leads to it is high above the sea and lined with immense fig trees and extensive vineyards, showing the fertility of the place. The church, as may be supposed, is now covered with whitewash and is surrounded by ruined outhouses where once monks used to live before the disestablishment, and where the people are put up at the annual panieris on August 15th. Few remains in Greece are more perfect than this Temple of Apollo at Sikinos. Somehow it has escaped observation, and it has been too high above the sea to make it of any use for building material. Hence, it escaped during the earlier years of vandalism. And when it was turned into a place of Christian worship, a certain amount of respect was secured for it, which other ruins did not obtain until later years. The roof is of modern date, being a Byzantine cupola, and around the edge are battlements, where the monks at the approach of pirates used to take refuge. There are still the remains of their kitchen, where they used to cook when compelled to live on the roof, and of the loopholes out of which they used to shoot their assailants, in the memory of the man who now owns and tills the land around. This personage received us with civility. He is quite a better sort of man, and considered himself superior to our muleteers. Certainly the Greeks of all classes are most frugally minded. Here, at Episcopi, his bed is composed only of the staves of a broken barrel over which a coverlet is cast. His plough, his firewood, some pots, and a helmet like a meat safe, which he calls his coryx for collecting honey. A bright green jar for oil, with a bit of sponge stuck in it as stopper, lie in hopeless confusion about his cell. His only chair is composed of two loose stones with a board on top of them. Yet he is a superior man, and has Kyrie put before his name whenever he is addressed. He gave us wine, water, and a horribly nasty cake composed of pastry mixed with all sorts of grasses and called pita. Luckily, we had provisions of our own with us, or we should have fared badly.